Hitler would have thanked Dr. King and would have thanked Dr. Gandhi for being so passively obedient and being led to the slaughterhouse.
No, he wouldn't have.
Can you hear us yet?
By no means a justification for war.
We Americans should be seen as a powerful nation that is able to forgive, to move on, and to show that we care for other people.
The main purpose of mass media is not to make sense nearly as much as it is to make money.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Friday, November 1st, 2002. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Bush administration is steamrolling ahead with plans to invade Iraq, and today Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld committed to sending over 100,000 American troops into Baghdad as ground forces for the attack. Some top civilian aides to Rumsfeld had argued that the Iraqi army could be defeated and Saddam Hussein ousted by a smaller number of troops relying on speed, surprise, air power, psychological operations, and help from Iraqi opposition groups. But General Tommy Franks, the commander of American forces in the Middle East as head of the U.S. Central Command, and other top officers, countered that Iraq is not Afghanistan and its forces could be much more formidable than the ragtag Taliban militia. Beyond that, Rumsfeld has declined to discuss any details of a possible Iraq invasion. He repeatedly has said that President Bush has not yet decided whether to make good on his threat of military attack if Saddam Hussein refuses to comply with a new round of United Nations weapons inspections. The UN is still debating whether to give the U.S. authority to wage war or whether that decision should rest with the UN. Meanwhile, a growing number of Americans are weighing in on the side of peace. Results of a Pew Research poll and a Fox News poll show the percentage of Americans supporting the war is slipping, anywhere from 62 to 55%. That reflects a 7 to 10% drop in support. Bottom line, 38 to 45% of Americans don't want to attack Iraq. Among those opposing Bush's war agenda are religious and spiritual leaders, some of whom say sending troops into Baghdad does not meet the Christian theological standard of a just war. Peace Watch posed the question, is Iraq a just war, to three religious leaders. Following is an excerpt of that debate. We spoke with Johann Christoph Arnold of the Bruderhof Faith and Dr. Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission, and we were joined later in the discussion by the Reverend Graylin Hagler of the Plymouth Congregational Church in Washington, D.C. Dr. Land offered this definition of a just war.
Well, I would say that just war, you have to go back to the beginnings of just war. Just war theory was worked out in the late 4th and early 5th centuries when Christians became enough of a majority in the Roman Empire that it became a real question of whether or not Christians should ever and under what circumstances be involved in armed conflict. And, you know, it was an attempt to put a hedge around war. For instance, just war would preclude holy war. Jihad, for instance, is absolutely always beyond the pale of just war. Just war can only be defensive. It can only be, you cannot seek to make war against civilians. You have to take into account that it's a last resort. You have to have it declared by legitimate authority. I think the debate that you've heard over the last 2 weeks among people who agree with just war theory is whether or not when you face an imminent threat from an enemy who has made it very clear that he intends you harm and that he is developing weapons of mass destruction, whether or not if you seek to eliminate that threat before he has actually launched his attack, whether that is defensive.
I want to know what proof that America has that Saddam Hussein is planning an imminent attack on Americans, because that is part of your definition of when there's a just war. And I think that there are analysts and researchers and even some former weapons inspectors. I would add Scott Ritter. I would cite Scott Ritter's report as one. Who have said that there is, in fact, no imminent threat on the part of Saddam Hussein.
Well, I think they're wrong, and I don't know, you know, I think Ritter has been contradicted by Hans Blick and by others who say that there must be absolutely complete weapons inspections. The presidential palaces cannot be declared off-limits. That's about 12 square miles and over 1,000 buildings that he's saying are going to be off-limits. You can develop a lot of weapons of mass destruction in that kind of an area with that kind of concealment. Scott Ritter is in a definite minority. I know, people who have pretty high national security clearances.
Well, Scott Ritter is a former U.N. weapons inspector.
Yes, and Hans Blick is a present U.N. weapons
inspector. Yes, and we spoke with Hans von Sponeck, who is with the humanitarian program with the United Nations, and he feels as well that there is no imminent threat on the part of Saddam Hussein.
Well, I'd rather err on the side of caution than on the other side. And I want to say about Mahatma Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi's nonviolent methods work when you're dealing with civilized nations like Great Britain, and Martin Luther King's methods worked when you're dealing with civilized nations like the United States. When you're dealing with Saddam Hussein, this is a contrast between civilization and barbarism. This is a man who watches films of people being tortured for amusement. This is a man who has killed members of his own family. This is a man who has no regard for the life of anyone but himself.
I'm not sure that all of that is true, but we are just joined by another caller.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yes, good afternoon, Reverend Hagler. We are in the middle of a very heated discussion about whether or not there is such a thing as a just war. We have on the line with us Dr. Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission and Johann Christoph Arnold with the Bruderhof Faith. Dr. Land says basically that this is a just war, and Johann Christoph Arnold says there is no such thing as a just war. Where do you weigh in that debate?
Well, I have to agree there's no such thing as a just war. I mean, in fact, the whole just war theology came out of dealing with necessities in the world, the fact that there was evil and people were waging war, and it was an attempt to try to put some Christian ethics into people's sinfulness. But there is no justification for war, it is not a biblical position, it is not a theological position. There is, in fact, when you look at the scripture and you look at particularly the Christian scripture, there is a strong prohibition towards repaying eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, extracting vengeance, and all of that.
Well, I think Dr. Land, who is with the Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission, has cited Romans 13 as an example of when one should raise the sword. Did you not, Dr. Land?
I did. And, the majority of the Roman Catholic tradition and the majority of the Protestant tradition for about 16 centuries disagrees that this is a non-biblical position. The just war theory has been accepted by most Christians in most places at most times since the 5th century A.D. And
the reality is the just war theory was an attempt to try to regulate sinful behavior and to infuse some ethics into an unethical situation.
Well, that's right, and we live
context,
in a sin.
That is the development of it.
We live in a sinful world, sir. We live in a sinful world.
By no means a justification for war. It was an attempt to try to regulate behavior if human beings were going to exist in that sinful state. And obviously, the scriptures call us to move from our sinful state to a state of being saved.
Well, that's true, but it also, look, if somebody comes into my house and kills my wife, I'm to turn the other cheek, I'm to return good for evil, I have no right to hate that person, I should love that person and seek their redemption, but I also have the right to expect the divinely ordained civil magistrate, the legal authorities, to punish that person, and they bear not the sword in vain for retribution against those who do evil. Because we live in a sinful world, God has given us a civil magistrate, and the civil magistrate has the right to use force, including
legal force. But also remember, you have an ahistorical approach to Romans. I mean, the fact is that the church was seen as a subversive movement, and those words in Romans was really to try to recenter the church, and particularly recenter the church in terms of the empire, so that the empire wouldn't see the church as being subversive or revolutionary. So when it talked about being respecting authority, it really had to do with the recentering of the church. It was not a blanket.
it was not a blanket approval of civil authority. In fact, Martin King had to act against civil authority for the basis for the fact that it was evil, that it had become demonic in terms of black people in the United States. The fact is we oppose civil authority all the time, and that is our role as prophets of the gospel.
Well, and that works in civilized societies. Hitler would have thanked Dr. King and would have thanked Dr. Gandhi for being so passively obedient and being led to the slaughterhouse.
No, he wouldn't have.
Dr. Land. You know, you say it works in civilized society. Well, when Jesus was born in the Roman Empire, it was not civilized society. And he said, love your enemy, pray for those who persecute you. He said on the cross, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do.
Johann Christoph Arnold. Now, gentlemen, I want to visit this question. I want to visit this question about a civilized society because I think that's critical. Dr. Land, you seem to think that the Iraqi people are not civilized enough and therefore...
No. Don't put words in my mouth. The Iraqi people are victims of this barbaric, uncivilized regime that has been foisted upon them. They have
again. That's another
ahistorical. Iraq is not a democracy. It is not a representative government. It is a murderous dictatorship run by a megalomaniacal dictator who has gassed his own people, who has ordered everyone between 15 and 70 killed in certain Kurdish villages, who used poison gas against the Iranians, who attacked Kuwait, who has killed members of his own family. Mm-hmm. The Iraqi people need to be liberated.
Is a war going to liberate the Iraqi people, or is it simply going to bomb their homes?
I think it's going to liberate the Iraqi people
the same way
the Afghans were liberated, and they greeted us as liberators,
Again, you have a very ahistorical position, and I want you to base yourself in reality.
I think your position is unrealistic, and I'm pretty tired of you calling me ahistorical, sir. You have an opinion, and I have one, and nobody can give you the authority.
Dr. Land, give him a chance to respond, please.
We had no problem supporting Saddam Hussein when he could be used by American forces to wage war against Khomeini. And in fact, that was American funding, that was American support. Billions of dollars was poured into the Saddam Hussein regime because it was able to be used for American exploit to fight a proxy war. That is part of the reality that we're dealing with right now. And the fact is, all the things that you cited may, in fact, be true, but the reality was it was true when we were funding Saddam Hussein then. So what is the problem then versus now?
Yeah,
the problem now is that we have new oil interests in the area, and it is time to remove Saddam Hussein and get direct control over that oil, and that's the reality that we're dealing with.
And why does Gandhi...
I utterly disagree.
Well, let's give Johann Christoph a chance.
Why does Gandhi say that an eye for an eye will make the entire world blind? Are we not silly? And Dr. Land, wouldn't it be good from the Baptist tradition if you learn a bit more about the gospel that goes beyond Romans 13? In the gospel, Jesus came to save life. He did not come to destroy life. And there's so many passages. Romans 13 is the only one that can be taken out of context. In Genesis 9, it says, whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made man. And in Chronicles, my son, I had it on my heart to build a house for the name of the Lord. But this word of the Lord came to me, you have shed much blood and have fought many wars. You are not to build a house for my name because you have shed much blood on this earth in my sight. And may God give the strength to President Bush, and we need to pray for him, that not more blood is shed than necessary. President Bush needs our prayers, and America needs to become a praying nation, a peaceful nation. and not a war-making nation. That is the will of Jesus, and that is the will of the gospel.
And I think that the real issue is whether we want our country to be an aggressive, warmongering nation that seeks revenge at incredible...
Nation. We're never going to be an aggressive, warmongering nation.
I think
nation.
That probably there could be a case made for that. And or whether we want to be considerate of the tremendous loss of lives, human lives, that would occur if this country is to attack Iraq.
If every nation in the world had the same desire for peace that we have, there would be no war in the world.
But again, I think that the reality is our desire for peace is only a desire for capital. We have friends in certain situations, and then those friends turn into enemies in the exact different historical context.
Well, I have a higher view of our country.
Dr. Land, let me
say this, Dr. Lamb. I mean, because you can sort of continue to push forth your point, and the reality is, and I'm speaking as a United Church of Christ, Disciples of Christ minister, the Southern Baptist does not have a good position in terms of liberation struggles anywhere in this world. In fact, the Southern Baptist was in favor of slavery. In fact, when you look at all those types of issues, they did not honor King, so you don't have a good analysis of
your
own theological position.
Position
is always to support the right wing of this country.
May I respond to that?
The prophetic tradition of the gospel. Prophetic tradition of the gospel.
We have questioning
authority that speaks to the issues of peace, that speaks to creating a new society. In Revelation chapter 21, it says, John says, I see a new heaven and a new earth, and that's what we are to aspire to.
Okay.
Are you finished?
Dr. Hagler.
A new heaven and a new earth.
Dr. Land.
Well, first of all, we have formally apologized to our African American brethren for
100 years late.
And you know what? You know what? And you're going to interrupt me again,
Dr.
or are you going to let me finish?
Let him have a chance.
You let me finish. I don't know how many African American members you have, but we have 750,000 Southern Baptist African Americans. We're the most integrated denomination in the country. We've gone from zero African Americans to 20% African American membership in the last 30 years. So I'll put what we're doing up against what you're doing.
I would really like to focus this on the war in Iraq.
Well, that was a slanderous comment that he made, and needed to be responded to.
Okay.
And it was a real one.
If we can refocus, however, I think the real question is what we want this nation to be, and whether Americans support operating unilaterally outside of the parameters of international law, which the Bush administration has said it will do if necessary, or whether we want to be a humane nation that earns the title of world power through civilized leadership and compassion for all of human life, wherever it is. I think that's the question, and I think the answer is that hundreds of thousands of anti-war activists marched across this country last weekend to say, we do not want this country to go to war. There were demonstrations in Denver, Colorado, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Indianapolis, Seattle, Washington, Augusta, Maine, Taos, New Mexico, San Antonio, Nashville, Cincinnati, Washington, D.C. There were over 100,000 here, San Francisco, and the list goes on. There were even demonstrations throughout the world saying that it's inappropriate for the U.S. to attack Iraq at this time.
And you know what? In the United States, you can do that without being put in jail or killed. You can't do that in Iraq.
You can do what? Oh, you mean demonstrate.
Right to do it, but you're a minority.
There's demonstrations
and a small
in Iraq
minority.
Right now. There's demonstrations in Iraq
you're
right now.
You're a small minority.
Particularly,
over 60% of Americans support President Bush.
The reality is there has been a deliberate muting by the press and other forces considerably the voices that have been against going to war. I mean, in fact, you can take a look at the New York Times, for example. The New York Times reported on the march here in Washington, D.C. on Saturday as a couple thousand people until they got irate.
Now, you're saying the New York Times is supporting Bush.
There was well over 100,000 people in Washington protesting the war that had taken considerable time to get here, to come on buses, to walk. The fact is, I'm at a predominantly black congregation, all mostly government workers here in Washington, D.C. I cannot find one person who is part of that so-called 50% that supports the war.
60%.
When I preach in other churches, I cannot find that.
Gentlemen, I think we need to sort of wind this up now, as much fun as we're having here.
Verna, I come at it from a religious perspective, from a group that has been persecuted and expelled from Nazi Germany and had to go to England, where we were expelled, and spent 20 years in Paraguay. We have always opposed war, violence, and killing from a religious perspective. I've been in this nation for 50 years. I am an American. I'm a proud American. And I invite my American fellow citizens to discover two weapons that are much more powerful and that will transform the whole world, including the threat from Iraq, and that is prayer. Prayer is more powerful than any atomic bomb, and the other is forgiveness. With forgiveness, there is never a loser, only a winner. And through forgiveness and prayer, America will finally become what the founding fathers who did the Declaration of Independence and wrote the Constitution had in mind. And we have lost their vision. We need to regain this vision. And all these international threats will be answered. And Werner, thank you for giving us the opportunity to express this.
Thank you all. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very
much. Johann Christoph Arnold of the Bruderhof Faith, Dr. Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission, and the Reverend Graylin Hagler of the Plymouth Congregational Church in Washington, D.C. One U.S. official suggested this week that if the U.N. Security Council appeared headed toward failure in its negotiations, the Bush administration might delay the outcome until after Election Day to avoid an embarrassing defeat and heightened fears of war just before voters head to the polls. Whether or not to go to war is a question voters in the nation's capital are making an issue for political candidates. Some callers on Pacifica station WPFW voiced their opinion of politicians who voted in favor of the Congressional War Resolution, giving President Bush authority to wage war against the people of Iraq. David Russo has more in this report.
Several callers challenged Representative Albert Wynn, a Democrat running for re-election, on Ambrose Lane's morning show We Ourselves. One such caller, Munda Masakoy from Fort Washington, Maryland, praised Wynn for being available to callers.
Good morning, Ambrose. How you doing?
Great.
And good morning, Congressman Wynn. Thanks for coming on the air with us.
Good morning.
A couple of things I want to thank you for, Congressman Wynn, for doing such a horrific job in representing the constituents of Prince George's County. I live in Fort Washington, Maryland, and we've never seen an Iraqi around here. Everyone around here is concerned. Is education the school that my daughter goes to? The last time it was remodeled was in 1960. The average age of the elementary schools around here is 42 years old. And when you talk about immediate threats, illiteracy is an immediate threat. Ignorance is immediate threats every day to the citizens of Prince George's County. We have no concern about Iraqis invading the United States or invading Prince George's County. And your job is to represent the people of Prince George's County. So I want to thank you, thirdly, for activating me. I've never been a voter, but you have inspired me, Congressman Wynn, to get involved, to rally the civic associations in Fort Washington, to hold workshops in my home for the PTAs so that we can get you out of office immediately. You have not done a job in representing us. And you also did a fine job of dodging the question that Mr. Lane asked you, which was a simple question. How many phone calls did you get, and how many were pro and how many were for the war? You totally dodged that question, and you have totally dodged your constituency. You have...
Thank you so much, caller.
Now, let me refresh the caller's memory. As a matter of fact, quite a few people in Prince George's County did die as a result of the events of September 11th. So I'm not going to conduct the business of representing this community in oblivion to that reality. Two people died as a result of anthrax in this community. I went to the funerals. The people who died in the Pentagon are people, some of those funerals I attended also. So the reality of the possibility of an attack is quite real. I also have dealt with the unemployment that resulted from the economic dislocation from an attack on this country. So to take a cavalier attitude about the possibility of an attack, I don't think reflects the sentiment of the people in Fort Washington, where I work with quite closely. In terms of education, I think if the caller checks my record, he'll find that no one has advocated more strongly for increased funding for education. I just had a college fair with 120 colleges up at Largo High School to help get young people into college. And we are constantly working to get more resources, working with the candidates for governor to assure more commitment for education. So when he calls those meetings, I'd be happy to attend any of those meetings and talk about the things that, I've been involved in. By the same token, if he is so concerned about education, I would think that he would have already have mobilized folks to focus on getting more money for education, and that this would not be a new phenomenon.
WPFW host Ambrose Lane Sr. also spoke with reporter Greg Pallast, the author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Lane asked Pallast about the impact of the peace rallies on next week's midterm election, especially with news that some 94,000 legitimate voters who were purged from the voter rolls in Florida before the 2000 presidential election have still not been added back to the rolls in time for this Tuesday's vote.
Let me ask you a couple of questions that we can get you thinking on.
Sure.
Historically, there has been an apathy around midterm elections, and all the talking heads are telling us that this is going to prove to be no different. And yet we saw last Saturday over 100,000 peace activists turned out here in Washington, D.C. alone, not counting all those others who turned out across the country and the world, to tell the Bush administration that we're opposed to war. Do you think people will turn out at the polls to vote against representatives and senators who voted for going to war with Iraq?
I think the public is not all that excited by the war one way or the other. I mean, it's the weapon. The war thing is the weapon of mass distraction. It's got the Democrats scared to say anything. But most people aren't fooled. In fact, I think you're going to see a record turnout in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And especially what's amazing, you know what's happening, which is a reversal of old patterns, and I think it's wonderful. You're seeing black turnout exceeding white turnout,
mm-hmm.
Which is quite amazing. In Florida, it's because they really can't stand that smug grin of Jeb Bush, who ended mm-hmm. affirmative action and kept black voters from voting in the presidential race.
Mm-hmm.
And the African-American vote in Florida is going to be absolutely enormous. And of course, needless to say, the Republican Party, which is in control of the voting mechanisms and the count and mm-hmm. the machinery and everything else, is going to be doing their best to suppress that vote. Like I say, the worst is keeping people off the voter rolls. And if you want the full story, just go to salon.com.
Absolutely. Greg, let me ask you one other question. I know you got to go. Some are suggesting that the let's get Saddam rhetoric is providing a smokescreen for the real issues, namely the economy. What impact do you think this has on this upcoming election?
You know, I think it does have impact because it's got the Democrats bound up in knots. They're spending their time talking about Iraq when, of course, the big issue of the economy
mm-hmm.
is most people are very, very unhappy with the way the economy's been handled. In fact, you'd have to be nuts if you're thrilled with it. You know, if your average person with their 401k pension plans, those phony private pension plans, have all imploded with the collapse of the market. You've got, for the first time since senior Daddy Bush was in the in the White House, you have a rise in the number of people without health insurance in America.
Right.
We have a serious free fall in the economy, and it's only, and frankly, I think we're only at the beginning edge of it. And so you know, when you ask about, you know, where's my pension plan, where's my health insurance, where's my job,
mm-hmm.
the answer is Saddam, Saddam, Saddam.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, I suppose we get a few jobs because the war machinery will spew out some instant jobs, though, of course, by its nature, the war industry blows up its product and therefore doesn't recycle, doesn't ultimately help build an economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wrecks economies by definition. I think that a lot of Democrats have been seriously distracted from getting to the big issues. And, of course, Republicans don't want to talk about the issues because they're not going to do too well.
Greg Palast, speaking with WPFW host Ambrose Lane Sr. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm David Russo.